Okay, all right. So,
so that's basically kind of, yeah, walk you through, do step one, step two, step three type thing.
That makes sense to me, and that goes back to what I mentioned before about your sales letter also serving as at least the first half of your instruction manual, the part that everyone should read.
Right, yep.
So I know when I read your book, I'm going to come away with the information of exactly what the first step is to finding a new product, to trying it out risk-free, then to joining the affiliate program, and exactly what steps I need to take to market it properly.
Yeah.
Now, most affiliate programs come with some marketing information. Why can't I just do that?
Because that one is beautiful, because everybody else is using that one, or uses the information that's there already, so you have no distinction between you and any of the other affiliates that are out there. So I would usually use that information as a basis to write my own information. Plus, a lot of the affiliate managers out there actually have never tested anything that they've done. They've just put stuff together and then let the affiliates test it, so I don't actually trust too much of the marketing that's out there for within the affiliate programs.
Okay. All right. And again, what is different about the materials that I would come up with as a student of your book as compared to the materials that an affiliate manager has already invented for me?
I would say the material that you would put together after reading the book would be more based on, like you had mentioned before as well, on your own experience. How did you find the product? What's the what did you like about the product? How did it work for you? What are the disadvantages? How does the product actually not kind of match the level of quality or what you expected it to do? Every product has little quirks that you won't be satisfied with. So I also bring that information out as well. So I would do almost a review from a very kind of unsales type of review, so that you can actually do a review of the product. It's very unbiased.
Okay. So you're going to teach me. In addition, when one of the features of your book is building a true, believable selling review.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. And what kind of guarantee are you offering on this product?
I would say something about, if you haven't increased your affiliate commissions by following the steps in the book, if you haven't increased your commissions by at least 100% within 60 days, then you get a full money back refund.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. So now all you have to do is tell me where to sign up.
So that's basically the process that you go through then, just what we've gone through now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, remember, we want to paint some pictures in there. Put a visual image of their head of whatever it is we can do with this money at the same time. Now, okay. Probably do want to talk about if this really has worked for you the way that you say.
Yeah.
Talk about the things that you can afford for your children that you weren't able to before. The freedom that you have now that you did before.
Right. Instead of saying that you can, you'll double your income from $150 a month to $300 a month, you can now have, or whatever, if you make from $150 to $1,500 a month, for example, that's more realistic. Then, then instead of saying so much on the money side, say more that you can make an extra house payment, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's fair. As far as that would take care of doing a sales letter for your website. What if you were doing a direct mail piece. You're going to actually write a letter. Would you use the same information or present it the same way as you do on your website?
For the most part, yes. Your sales letter, when you mail it out, is probably going to be a little more concise. You may either... I'm trying to think here. If we're still talking about your product, and you are doing a direct mailing,
yep,
then it's perfectly fine to direct them to your website, where
yep,
you could have more information. Because when you're doing the direct mailing, you're gonna pay per piece of paper that you put in there.
Exactly.
You probably would want to do something tasteful, professional, but eye-catching, also as an insert. Whether it's a brochure or, you know, something with a photograph of real people that evokes happiness, but a simple short letter is what they're actually going to read. I really don't believe in reinventing the wheel, so, you know, make it a to and from, and use a courier font. All the stuff that Ted Nicholas has always talked about. I mean, his tactics still make millionaires every day. So.
And what kind of stuff does he talk about?
Using black ink on white paper, or I think he also says a very light yellow. Most borders are distracting. Always use a PS. Sign the signature. I believe it's blue ink. I've never spent a whole lot of time in direct mailing, so I don't have a lot of personal experience there. I just know from everything that I've read, and I always take that information and try to apply it to the web.
Right. Okay.
But,
so
honestly, yeah, just stick with what the experts say. I wouldn't pretend to be an expert on direct mail,
okay,
in particular.
So what about then, like you mentioned, for direct mail, you would use short copy and basically send them to the website. When they get to the website, what do you use there? Is it short copy or is it long copy?
Your website's probably going to be long copy, unless your product is really that simple.
Okay. So what would long copy be then? Are we looking at 10 pages, 20 pages?
Even 3 printed pages, I would still consider long copy.
Oh, okay.
At 3 printed pages, you're probably going to be, you know, sitting there looking at the screen for, I don't know, maybe 6-7 minutes to read that.
Okay, yep.
At an average reading rate, and That's a fair amount of time invested in internet terms.
Yeah, exactly. That's a lifetime.
Right. You know, I'll bet most people listening to this call would be happy to get their prospects to look at their page for 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you do then? You've got your prospect there for a very limited time. How do you get them from the headline to take action and click that order button as quickly as possible?
Well, you do need to repeatedly ask them to take action. Don't ever leave it to their imagination. Don't let them try to figure it out for themselves. Just tell them exactly what they need to do to get these benefits you keep talking about. So, you know, every 2 or 3 paragraphs, put in a direct action statement. You know, order now or click here or put your name in the box to sign up for it.
Okay. Now, as far as...
Yeah, don't ever forget that. You absolutely need a call to action.
And before the end of the actual sales letter, how many times would you ask for the sale? Is it kind of... I mean, if you ask for it too much, does it not look like you're a bit needy?
Yeah, it does. So sometimes those can actually be, you know, a copy connector. Since everything that you're talking about is probably going to have to do with actually buying the product, you can use that in a sort of a foo-foo sentence.
A what?
A foo-foo.
What's that?
It's made up. It's fluffed up.
Okay.
It's something that your English teacher would probably scoff at.
Okay.
So, you know, if you have two benefits or two things that you want to talk about, and they don't really flow together, and they don't really flow with anything particularly well in the copy, you can use what's called a copy connector, and that's a phrase which helps bridge those strange gaps. You know, if at first you're telling a story about, you know, one of your clients who, you know, read the book 2 months ago, and you know, now he's making $2,000 in India.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the next statement or the next paragraph, you're talking about something that's seemingly unrelated, like I don't know. What else? What would be a tough jump from there? What else are you talking about in this copy?
A jump from the client making $2,000 a month in India.
Mm-hmm.
Another subject that you that would be difficult to jump to from there would be the actual technical aspects of writing the advertorial.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
Trying to jump from there to the next one, that might be difficult.
Okay. So at the end of the story about the guy in India,
mm-hmm.
you're going to say, and all of this was possible simply because he took the leap and ordered the book. And with ordered, you're probably going to make that a clickable link, and that will either lead to your catch page, or it could just be an HTML anchor that takes them to the bottom of the page where the sign-up form is.
Okay.
So it's a live action, because when you make something bold like that or italicize or underline, you're separating that phrase in the reader's mind. This is a hypnotic method, which is often abused or used inappropriately. But if you take an actual command that flows within the sentence, like, and this was all made possible because he took the leap to order the product.
Uh-huh.
And then you have that order the product is in big blue letters with an underline under it, and you know that means to click. Your mind sees that separately. It says order the product. Okay? It's
okay.
A way of embedding the command. That's very, very much a Joe Vitale tactic.
Okay. Yeah.
And we're trying to link that to your technical. What was this technical description again?
Basically, the formula for writing an advertorial.
Formula for writing an advertorial. Okay. And how does that start? Where does that paragraph start?
As far as like a first sentence, you mean?
Yeah, the first sentence.
It could be something like when you're writing your first advertorial, you need to consider 5 key aspects.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're gonna reverse that a little bit, and we're gonna start the paragraph is. And once you order the product, you will learn these 5 steps for starting your advertorial.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can separate that with white space and indent it so it looks like it's another paragraph. But those two phrases will obviously flow because it's the same words. And so your call to action, your asking for the sale, is repeated. It's at the end of the one paragraph, and at the beginning of the next, so you have a recency and a primacy effect going on there. and they're logically tying together two things which are probably as far apart as possible within the scope of your sales copy. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yep. So that's your foo-foo sentence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
That's the way to foo-foo the sentence and build that into there and use that to connect copy rather than to then adding another thing that seems disjointed.
Okay. Right. Well, I'd like to just kind of switch gears, still within copywriting, Tom.
Okay.
This is actually a question that came out from my list. There's a lot of people actually are interested in getting into the copywriting business, but really don't know where to start. How would you go about breaking into the copywriting industry? I mean, yourself, for example. I mean, you are a very good copywriter. If you're going to go out and basically market your skills, where do you go? Like, you know, within what industry? Within, you know, who do you talk to within the industry?
I'll tell you, Terry. I've never looked at myself as a career copywriter. It is a skill that I've picked up that I found incredibly valuable both to myself and in my personal business ventures, and in, you know, in my career, as I talked about in the beginning, you know, in terms of finding new work. But it's never something that I've seriously thought of as a career in and of itself. So when putting this question into scope, it's how do you take the first step in a new career? You know, that's the way I really see this question.
Uh-huh.
And one is you should teach yourself, immerse yourself in the knowledge. I'm certain that you are nearby a library that has some information on copywriting. Go ahead and read it. Pick up one of the masters. You know, some of this stuff is in the public domain. You can probably do a Google PDF search and come across you know, something. I probably bought these books before I even knew about that tactic. But don't be afraid to take the plunge and learn things. It's like that old adage of, you know, pay yourself first and you'll get rich. When it comes to your time, always continually make that time to invest in your own intelligence, your own education, because it takes both an investment of time and time, energy, and sometimes money. So as I'm educating myself, I'm also going to take real world action steps towards it. If I really have nothing of value to offer that's believable, you know, if there's absolutely no track record, I've never written copy before, or I've never written copy that's actually survived, then I'm probably going to have to go out and do, you know, one of those two things that I talked about before. It's either I'm going to ask for a job somewhere, or I'm going to ask someone for information that I can republish. You know, those are the two avenues that I see as universal. You may be able to expose other avenues in your searches, but those aren't always going to work out. I'm not saying don't look for them, but I wouldn't expect them to be there for everyone at every moment in their lives, the way that internships and interviews will be.
Right.
So let's talk about, you know, I want to talk about the concept of the internship. Some of your listeners might be a little put off by that term, because it sounds like you're working to be underpaid or you're working for no pay.
Mm-hmm.
I've been seeing so much coming through the pipeline, and by the pipeline I mean all the lists that I've subscribed to, about this and that mentoring program, $2,500, $5,000 mentoring programs. I really am not a big fan of that. I think it's a fad and a trend, and I don't know if you've been a part of that at all, Terry, and I'm sorry if you have, but I don't buy into most of it. And a big part of that is because I think mentoring is it's about 99% student and about 1% mentor.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the effort and energy and the right mindset and put that into studying someone from afar, it's probably going to be of more value to you, and you'll learn more and do more with that information than somebody who paid $5,000 because they thought that, you know, so-and-so marketing expert could drive the information into their skull.
Yep.
But if your mindset is there that you're going to drop $5,000, why not just read the articles that they've written, spend $200 buying the books that they've written, and put away the other $4,500. Sorry about the math there, but you get what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Take that money and put it into a money market fund for the time that you're figuring out how you're going to make your start your business with it.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying successful people in the field that you're looking at can't help you. Of course they can. I know that from personal experience too. But I was at a company, Aethought Marketing, with 35 other employees, many of whom probably had more interaction on a daily basis with Mark Joyner than I did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of all of those people who worked at Aethought Marketing, I think the only one who's ever really ventured out into anything in this field or employed any of the skills that Mark taught and that we all sold as a company,
mm-hmm.
was Maria. Maria, I think her last name was Belosa, but I'm not sure. I don't think we ever overlapped, because I think that she left a lot earlier than I got there, or right around the time that I got there.
Yeah.
But she certainly made a name for herself. There were brilliant people around me. There really were.
Uh-huh.
But nobody looked at Mark Joyner and said, well, you know what, I want to learn from him. Nobody did that. If you read Rich Dad Poor Dad,
yeah,
you know, that's why they managed to be successful. Both I can't even remember the author's name right now. That's
Robert Kiyosaki.
Yes, Kiyosaki.
Yeah,
and Mike, both of them.
Yeah.
They took it upon themselves. They set the intention. We're going to learn how to make money.
Yep.
And that's why that experience was so much more valuable to them than anybody in his organization who just had jobs there. The intention is what guided them to that success. It's what guided them to pull that information out of him.
So if you had a choice, then would you find someone who you feel is really kind of an expert in their field, and then offer to work with them, even if it's for peanuts, as opposed to buying their time as a mentor?
I'm not saying you should never buy their time as a mentor. In a way, you're doing the same thing. I just think in most cases it's not necessary. Also, like in Rich Dad Poor Dad, when he talks about investments, a $5,000 mentoring package is a prepackaged investment. It's something that already has the profitability taken out of it.
Yeah.
When you set out and create your own opportunity. When I wrote a letter to my hero and asked for an internship, I was not filling a position, I was creating a position.
Yeah.
And by doing that, I put myself in a position of control, you know? And I think our relationship, it's only been a couple of weeks, and I've learned more. I can't verify this, but I think I've already learned more about producing and engineering than a lot of people who would just simply take a job or take a course would in a year.
Wow.
And it has to do with the mindset, it has to do with the intention, it has to do with focusing your energy, understanding what your goals are, what your long-term and short-term goals are. I know exactly where I'm headed, and I know what skills I have to offer now to the people who are important that will be of value to them so that I can get the information and the skills that I need to get where I'm going.
Excellent.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If we go back to kind of the internet marketing side of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
From the aspect of email marketing and list building, which is extremely important for anybody building a business online, how would I build a responsive list fast?
Offer something miraculous.
Okay, like what?
That's the hard part.
Let's
yeah.
use the ebook, for example, the affiliate marketing ebook. How am I going to build a list of people who they've read the sales letter, but they're not in the right position or time in their life to buy the book right now, but they would be interested in more information on affiliate marketing, that basically if I was going to write a newsletter or something. But how would I build that list of people that I could send my newsletter to who would maybe in the future be interested in the book? Or, I mean, right from the beginning, starting now, I have no list and very little contacts. How would I go about going from point A where I am now to point B where I have a decent size list? Maybe I start, only 1,000 people, but at least somewhere to start. How would I be able to develop that list and have it be a responsive list, not just people that don't ever buy anything?
When you get into list building, you're really usually you're talking about another product creation.
Now, the list being the product, you mean, or
whatever the benefit of the list is? Yes.
Okay.
A common way to do it, especially if you're looking to market an ebook, is you have them sign up for your autoresponder and they get a chapter, 1 through 5 over the course of 10 days. And that's something that then can be given out free, and you send them similar information later, whether it's just articles that you've gathered off of free article sites, or that you write yourself in the future, or updates to the book. Especially if you're talking about affiliate marketing, of course you're going to be feeding them new affiliate opportunities on a regular basis. So I would imagine that is going to be the hard part. The hard part for you in building an affiliate marketing targeted list is trying to differentiate yourself
from all the other affiliate products.
Right, yep. Right.
Yeah. Well, what's your opinion on, for example, if you and I did an interview on affiliate marketing, and then maybe it's just a simple half-hour interview where we discuss, the logical sequence that you would go through to become an affiliate and to actually make money being an affiliate. We do about a half an hour interview, and then we use that as basically the giveaway or the incentive, mm-hmm. to get people to sign up for that list. So, you know, listen to Tom and Terry talk about, you know, the weird and wonderful ways that they use affiliate marketing to develop a six-figure income. What's your opinion on on getting people to sign up, you know, to get that, basically just giving away a freebie?
I think it's now the classic approach to any kind of internet marketing venture, especially where you're ultimately selling information is you give away information before it, whether it's a live teleconference or it's a free report or the autoresponder chapters or it's an audio download. You're going to give them some information. It's easy to create an info product.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. And it's pretty easy to give one away. And it's pretty easy to build traffic giving one away. I think the big secrets there is, like, if we're doing the audio interview, mm-hmm. and we're going to offer that as the free bonus for or the incentive for signing up for the list. The hard part is building those mental triggers that will get somebody to where they have to hear the audio to answer the questions that you put in their mind. And that's where you go back through and you just listen to the audio the whole way through. Or if it's on paper or on the screen, you sit there with a notepad, and you take notes on the most specific information that is talked about.